I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. Before we turn right back to all the stuff we have together to talk about, let's get you home safe and turn this over to WEAA Traffic. Stay with us.
Muslim rap artists, brothers Suleiman and Hamza Perez.
So now, brother Hamza, you are a married man, you're American, you're Puerto Rican, you're from the hood, you're Muslim, you're a rapper. Yeah, you know, you have all sound like America's worst nightmare.
Just for all you Arabs and Pakistanis, African Americans will teach you the secrets of Boricua halal cooking.
I didn't know too much about their religion, and my family still doesn't know too much. You know, I brought the boys up in Catholic school, and I'm glad my kids are all drug-free and they don't drink, they don't smoke. Sometimes I don't like the music. The words are kind of tough sometimes.
Mujahideen team!
What we do is we come on stage with the machetes on fire.
Y'all know what this is, FTG, flag the government. This is for the real cats. We don't care about no Patriot Act. We don't care about surveillance. We don't care about the FBI agents in the club.
The FBI converge on a mosque and they raid it.
The agents in tactical gear surround a house with their guns drawn and ready.
But agents won't say why. The house they surround.
It's hard for you to tell someone who is a gangster, who's trying to live a religious life, that someone's going to invade your home. You have to turn your cheek and forgive them.
Jason was always pushing. He didn't like a lot of injustices in life. I always told him, you have to give in life to take, right?
I started realizing all the stuff that I didn't like about me and how I wanted to replace those characteristics with the characters of the prophets of God.
You guys opened up with your guys' prayer already? We're going to be talking about the brotherhood of humanity.
Welcome home, I press you, start from the past. Just keep your head up and stay on the straight path.
So as I learned more about the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, and his life, then I realized what type of man I had to be.
Take care, okay?
Shalom aleichem.
Wa alaikum salam.
Yeah, That's okay. That was the idea.
This is dedicated to brothers coming home. We're gonna stand by your side so you're not alone. Welcome home, all my soldiers that were locked. Welcome home, free from the prison blocks. Welcome home, a fresh new start for the path. Just keep your head up and stay on the straight path.
I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. So we're about to talk to Hamza Perez, who is a hip-hop artist and the main person featuring in this film, New Muslim Cool. He and many others will be here on Tuesday night, 7 p.m. at the Brown Center, the Maryland Institute College of Art, for the OSI presentation, Is America Really Post-Racial?, a screening of New Muslim Cool. You can join us there, but join us here right now. And Hamza, welcome. Good to have you with us, man.
Hey, thank you for having me.
So for our listeners, let's give a little background before we talk about the film that was shown on Point of View last June on PBS. But your story itself, I mean, it's funny that I saw this because I read an article just a little bit ago about the growing number of Puerto Ricans who are converting to Islam. So tell a little bit about your journey from the streets to Islam.
Well, basically, you know, many people accept Islam in America, from the universities to prison to just regular people who are just searching their souls. So I basically had a rough background growing up in the streets, and I ended up, a friend of mine who was involved in a gang. I was never involved in a gang, but he was. And I saw how Islam changed his life, and I ended up embracing Islam.
Did you find Islam inside prison, or did you find Islam in the community?
In the community.
So, and what was it that drew you to Islam? I mean, you grew up as a Catholic, as a Puerto Rican, as a Catholic. So what drew you to Islam?
Well, basically, in Islam, it didn't change how my beliefs as a Christian Catholic. You know, we believe that there's only one God. We believe that Jesus Christ was born from the Virgin Mary. We believe that Jesus Christ is coming back. But it was a more personal connection with God, kind of separate from, you know, worshiping a cross and praying to the cross. And Islam was very familiar to me because it had similar concepts as Catholicism. And I think that's why you have a large population of Latinos. In the United States, there's over 70,000 Latino Muslims.
That's a really interesting number. And that's also, I mean, what you, your persona and what you do kind of takes this whole idea of this multiracial society of ours in America and adds this new mix and twist.
Yeah, this goes out to all my soldiers, you know what I'm saying? Coming home out of the jails.
Yeah, a lot of Muslims that they just, you know, their Islam may be a cultural thing, or their Islam may be a robotic form, where they look at Islam as black and white when Islam is so colorful.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Peace and greetings to all of the people from here today.
It's a new generation, man, that wants traditional Islam, but using technology and the culture of society. We created our own clothing, you know, our own way of talking, you know, our own music, you know what I'm saying, our own slang. Instead of listening to garbage rap music, I'm listening to some music that speaks about spiritual belief and social change. You know, instead of wearing clothing that has Scarface on it, I may have a shirt with a positive message on it. I'm Islamifying my clothing, taking the culture and making it more spiritually identifiable for us. Being in this society, but not compromising our identity. That's the thing of humanity. It's about human beings breaking out of these boxes of Christians and Jews and Muslims and looking at this thing as an issue of humanity. That's what we are. We're human beings. We're not this other alien, curry-eating aliens. We're just human beings, man.
Um, that is just, it's just amazing. I mean, talk about what you think that this new young Muslim world that you're so deeply part of is trying to say to America.
Yeah, I mean, that Islam is the fastest growing religion, and then, you know, Latinos is one of the fastest growing populations. And you have young people in the United States who are doing their own soul searching and investigation and what they think about religion and comparing different religions. And I think a lot of people relate to what Islam teaches, because in Christianity, it's real segregated. You have, you know, churches for white Christians, churches for African-American Christians, and churches for Latinos. And they're supposed to follow the same teachings, but they're always segregated. And you find in Islam, it's not like that. You find a more cultural mix and more people united under the faith than how we grew up in Christianity.
But you're also, I mean, you've gone like from the thug life to a life of, as a teacher and as a hip-hop artist, as a teacher, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's nothing new. You know, Islam is one of the main things that helps change and reform, you know, people from rough backgrounds. And also, you know, it's not, you know, people can't get it confused that only people with rough backgrounds are accepting Islam. Many university students and people who are trying to seek a sense of form of happiness, you know. So, you know, many people, Islam has helped reform many people from the streets, you know, and I've talked to many wardens in different prisons, and they feel like it's the number one and the only solution to really reform inmates.
How does the hip-hop world fit into all that for you?
I mean, it's hip-hop, you know, if you look at the origins of hip-hop, like with the Last Poets, you know, half of them were Muslim, and Islam has a deep history of poetry. And so in Islam, all that exists within the Islamic faith and also Middle Eastern culture and also African culture. So, and you have these cultures combined, and they've come out throughout time, and you just find it in hip-hop. You know, in hip-hop is more than just rapping. You know, you have the dance part of hip-hop. You have the art, which is like, you know, herb street calligraphy. All this stuff exists within the teachings of Islam.
Talk about that for a minute. What do you mean it all exists within the teachings of Islam?
A lot of elements of hip-hop, you know, like, say, graffiti.
Uh-huh.
You know, I don't condone, you know, damaging people's property, but the actual art of like, calligraphy and letters, this is something big in Islam, because in Islam, we don't draw, like, human figures. And then the poetry aspect, let's say, of, like, rhyming or being an MC, this is how history was passed on throughout African and Arab culture. So this is how hip-hop started off. Hip-hop started off with, you know, talking about, you know, knowledge of self and what's going on in the streets and being aware of one's culture, and that's how hip-hop started. So it's that, all those elements, you can find it in Islam.
So your rap group, you and the brother you rap with, that was in your film.
Yeah.
What's his name?
His name is Suleiman.
Suleiman, right. And he's also Puerto Rican, correct?
Yeah, that's my blood brother.
And you've known him for a long time. And you created this rap group called Two Mujahideen. Do I have that right?
No, it's called M-Team.
Okay. So tell me about that, and tell me about the stuff you all create.
Yeah, basically, you know, first of all, we're Puerto Rican,
uh-huh.
And our faith is Muslim. So we address issues that deal with Latinos, we address issues that deal with Muslims, and then we're also American. So we address issues that we face here growing up in America. So it's basically, it touches different cultural backgrounds and different elements that we deal with within the United States and also globally. So it's more of a political and conscious type of hip hop.
But I what I'm really interested in is this marriage of the world of hip hop, the new young Muslims in America, and the struggle for equality in America, through your life and work, seem to be coming to a place, a very interesting place. And I think there are not too many of us who kind of feel that kind of thunder from the bottom coming up, but in many ways, I think it's represented through the stuff that you do.
I mean, definitely. I think what the music we do is more than just music. You know, it's about, you know, the community programs we have. On Sundays, we have like a drive-by feeding the poor program where we get in the car and we have some rice and chicken that's cooked up, and we go under the highways where there's a lot of homeless people and we feed the homeless. We have community programs, you know, with the Boys and Girls Club and the YMCA. So it's more, it's just like the verbal tool to what we do, you know, but it's, if we don't do something physically and take action, then the words are just useless.
So now you're on Sojourn there. You came from Massachusetts originally, correct?
I'm originally from Brooklyn, New York, and then I moved to Puerto Rico, and then I lived in Massachusetts for a while, yes.
And then you ended up in Pittsburgh?
Yes.
Which is where you're now?
That's correct.
So, A, why did you go to Pittsburgh, and talk a bit about what you set up there?
Well, in Pittsburgh, my teacher was here, and he collected over 2,000 manuscripts from West Africa. And the reason I moved to Pittsburgh is because I designed community programs using these manuscripts that were written in West Africa over 200 years ago.
Is that Imam Talib?
No. Imam Talib is just like he's one of our teachers from New York. My teacher, his name is Sheikh Mohammed Sharif.
And what did he find in Africa?
He found amazing manuscripts written by scholars from the Sokoto Empire, like Ruth Manda and Fodio, and these are manuscripts that help build and organize communities and also make you go deep into analyzing yourself, like the diseases of the heart, you know, like jealousy, envy, arrogance, showing off, conceit, unjust anger. And I use these manuscripts to help work with families and communities here in Western Pennsylvania.
So I wonder how you all that fits into what happened to your mosque in Pittsburgh that you're part of that was, I understand, raided by the FBI.
Yeah, our mosque was raided by the FBI in 2006, and a lot of it has to do with a lot of work that we do with, you know, gang members and uniting with other Muslims around the country to help do different stuff. And even before I moved, the FBI was doing like surveillance on community organizations that I worked with. But they raided our mosque, and, you know, we had nothing to hide. And, you know, the person that was arrested was someone that was charged with a firearm in Utah and had nothing to do with Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. So
what do you think that was about?
Yeah, that's what it was about. I mean, they really wanted to go in the mosque to see if we had anything in the mosque, but we don't have anything in the mosque. That's why there was no one arrested from our community.
I mean, what do you think that was about politically and socially that they kind of would identify your mosque in Pittsburgh?
Yeah, I mean, it's just COINTELPRO with a new face on it, you know.
Uh-huh.
In the 60s, you had movements like the Black Panthers and the Young Lords and movements like that. And now, you know, the main focus is Islam. So, I mean, you know, they can surveillance us and they can watch us, but we're not doing anything wrong, so we don't really mind.
This new young movement of Islam, I've talked to a lot of young people who are Muslim now, and they it's like when I looked at the pieces of the documentary, A New Muslim Cool, the events you have, there are women whose heads are covered, women whose heads are not covered. There are every race imaginable in these events you have, your hip-hop Muslim events that you have, the ones I saw. I mean, I think that this is a face of Islam and a face of young people that we don't see very much. This is not the face the media wants us to see.
Definitely. I mean, you know, if you watch the film, you see Muslim women who are happy, who are content, who are, you know, enjoying themselves, organizing, being involved with the community. And it's just it's the American face of Islam. But really, there's Muslims like this all over the country and all over the world. And sometimes the media just focuses on some idiots who are really blue light of what Islam is about. So since they're blocking the light, people are just left with the shadow, and all they see is the darkness from ignorant actions of other people. And it's up to Muslims to allow people to see the light of what Islam is really about.
I want to live a married life, you know, have a family and all that. Because in Islam, we don't have a boyfriend and girlfriend. So
I always make prayer that Allah blesses me with a good wife, you know.
It's gonna be fun. I'm gonna be busy. We look forward to it, though. When we first started communicating with each other, we were communicating with each other online. So I was able to ask all the important questions ahead of time. I like the process because it eliminated anything. Eliminated any, like, lust or attraction where you get distracted and you don't ask the important questions. The first thing he said was, "Are you looking to get married?" I was like, "Wow." I was like, "You're pretty blunt."
So, and when you write your lyrics for the to share, do your lyrics come from you? Do they come from old Islamic literature? Do they come from people like Rumi? Where do they come from?
It's all mixed up, you know. Sometimes I'm inspired by manuscripts and stuff like that. And sometimes I'm inspired by old Puerto Rican salsa music.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, it's all a mixture of, you know, different elements that we have inside of us.
I mean, I think sometimes, given the roots of hip-hop, I was thinking about this and thinking about you, that we forget that, like, in America and probably the entire Western Hemisphere, that the slaves brought from the shores of Africa in the 17th, 18th, 19th centuries, at least one third of them were Muslims.
Definitely. And they were not just regular common folk Muslims. A lot of them were scholars like Wazir Abdul Rahman and Umar ibn Sa'id. These people were people who had, major portions of the Quran memorized. I mean, they found handwritten Qurans down south, buried under the ground. I mean, they were, you know, so many people, they were learned people, they were scholars, and they just weren't, you know, how the United States portrayed, like, some savage people. And many of these customs and their ethics and morals still exist within African-American culture.
So what do you think that the movement that you're part of, I mean, because I know that what you embrace in many ways and the people you embrace are beyond the Muslim world. I mean, there are Christians and Jews and others as well. People who follow traditional African worlds as well. I'm curious what this says in terms of your view and that view of America and race in the future. I know you have to go back to teach your class, but just tell us for a second what all that embraces and says to America.
Yeah, I mean, some people claim the civil rights movement is over because we have a black president.
Right.
I disagree. I'm from the Malcolm X mentality that first they send the wolf and then they send the fox. So, I mean, just because we have a president that has an iPod and shoots a three-pointer doesn't mean that the situation of race has changed in America. I think it's even almost getting worse. So, I don't get caught up in the hype and I don't get caught up in the illusion. I mean, it's just, you know, the same thing that was going on before, but with a different face. And so I think we still have issues in America. I think it's getting better with the younger generations that's coming about. But we can't act like it doesn't exist.
And what, in this new home of yours, I mean, you met a woman online, right? An African-American woman who's also Muslim. You married.
Yeah, that's correct.
And you have children.
Yes, that's correct.
And you also had children from before.
Yes, I was a single father raising my own kids.
So you have, all those kids are with you now?
I have six kids.
The kids from your...
I have five kids inside.
So, and they live with you?
Yes, all five kids live with me.
I mean, because part of the thing is also your just struggle as a man, not just as a Muslim, but as a Puerto Rican man from the street who has gone from the kind of corner life to this new life and finding a new way to express your manhood. I mean, that's a powerful struggle in its own right.
Yeah, you know, in Islam, the illusion that, you know, the women are barefoot in the kitchen is an illusion. You know, in Islam, men, we help raise kids. I change diapers, you know. I was a single father raising kids on my own, and that's what being a man in Islam is. It's working together with your spouse to help your family achieve, you know, a better life. So that's nothing new. That's stuff that you won't see in the media. You know, single Muslim fathers. I know a lot of single Muslim fathers raising their kids on their own. So, you know, that's just part of our culture. You know, my wife's African-American. I'm Latino. Our race is, you know, is important, but what's more important is our goal, and our goal is to try to get closer to God.
And you're doing this from the streets and the home and the birthplace of August Wilson.
Yes, yes, amazing city as Pittsburgh and a big jazz city. I'm a big jazz fan, so you'll hear a lot of that in the film. That's why it's called New Muslim Cool. It was inspired by the rebirth of Cool of Miles Davis.
I think that you are part of a wave of a trend that's going to be that we need to talk more about. I know you have to go teach your class now, but I want to thank you for the time you had.
Hey, no problem, Mark. And I'm sorry. I wish I could give you more time. I got a fifth grade class I got to teach.
No, man, you got to take care of the kids. But what I want to make sure, Hamza, is that we have a chance to do a much longer piece together very soon, because I want to hear more of your story and play clips and have a much longer conversation with you. And I want to thank you for what you do.
Yeah, no problem, Mark. You have a good day, and thank you very much.
Take care.
Okay, bye.
Hamza Perez, MZ Hamza, a Puerto Rican independent hip-hop artist who went from Catholicism to Islam, from the streets to fatherhood. And he will be in Baltimore along with a number of others for the next OSI event on race this Tuesday night at Micah at 7 p.m. You're listening to The Mark Steiner Show on Public Radio WEAA 88.9 FM. The voice of the community. Don't go away. We'll be right back after this very short break. Out of the prisons, out of the slave plantations, man. Welcome home, all my soldiers that were locked. Welcome home, free from the prison blocks. Welcome home, a fresh new start from the past. Just keep your head up and stay on the straight path. Welcome home, all my soldiers that were locked. Welcome home, free from the prison blocks. Welcome home, a fresh new start. It ain't hard to tell. Life from the yard to the cell. A dedication to my ox being free from jail. Whether you did your bit, posted bond or bail. Tell them guards on the bar they can go to hell. Finally released, back in the land of the beast. And the game done change, it ain't the same in the streets. Now your time is over, time to keep your mind sober. No more street swine, wine, or the white lines of coca. In jail cats quote the Quran and the Bible. But staying clean on your deen, take serious survival. You got a plan with nothing but sweat in your hand. But first things first, go connect with your fam. May God give you victory, peace and tranquility. Never allow you to be stripped from freedom and liberty. This is dedicated to brothers coming home. We're gonna stand by your side so you're not alone. Welcome home, all my soldiers that were locked. Welcome home, free from the prison blocks. Welcome home, a fresh new start for the past. Just keep your head up and stay on the straight path. Good to see you out. Some thought it wouldn't happen. They had their doubts. When you went up north, that's when things went south. Kids run their mouth, that's when the guns come out. But you out, you need to chill. The streets is wild still. Now the child kills and shootouts like Wild Bill. They walk with foul grills, but that's to hide the pain. I know it's hard, cause the block is calling your name. Rocks are calling your game. Bid is stalling your fame. And the place is the same, but all the faces have changed. The thing that remained was your will to survive. I know inside, them pigs tried to kill your pride. And even though you alive, sometimes you feel you die. Your mom cried, now she smiled like she used to do. Got some jewels for you, read a jewel or two. For now, enjoy this feast that we threw for you. Welcome home, all my soldiers that were locked. Welcome home, free from the prison blocks. Welcome home, a fresh new start from the past. Just keep your head up and stay on the straight path. Welcome home, all my soldiers that were locked. Welcome home, free from the prison blocks. Welcome home, a fresh new start from the past. Just keep your head up and stay on the straight path. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by Johns Hopkins Medicine. For the 19th consecutive year, the Johns Hopkins Hospital is ranked number one by U.S. News & World Report in their annual Best Hospital Survey. Find out more about the nation's top hospital at hopkinsmedicine.org. Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland Parkinson's Disease and Movement Disorders Center, providing clinical research trials that evaluate new therapies and the latest treatment options, including surgical intervention for advancing stages of disease. The number for more information is 1-800-492-5538. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. This is part two of our conversation about the upcoming OSI event on race. We just heard our conversation with Hamza Perez, and we are about to have a conversation now with another man who is going to be part of this, who will be leading it, who will be running this dialogue, and that's Bakari Kitwana, who is author of The Hip Hop Generation. And Bakari, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
So, Bakari, I was really fascinated by first, one of the things I'm so fascinated by in terms of looking at race in America and race in this world. Is the cultural transformation that takes place in almost every generation. I mean, when you look at the history of the world and the power of what I often call the African diaspora, whether it's been through jazz, blues, soul, but now even more powerfully in many ways is hip-hop and what that's done to the world, kind of crossing the lines of race and especially talking to those of the oppressed around the world. Talk about the power of that.
Wow, it's a huge topic.
Yes, it
is. I mean, hip-hop has been a huge phenomenon for, you know, over three decades at this point. I think that one of the early testaments to its international appeal was the impact of the Zulu Nation, headed by Afrika Bambaataa. And from the beginning, Afrika Bambaataa had a vision of hip-hop spreading around the world. And being this kind of cross-racial space where, you know, this universal space that spoke to the common humanity in everyone, one of the early pioneers of hip-hop. And I think that we've seen the Zulu Nation spread to all continents. And more recently, we see the impact of hip-hop cross-culturally. I talked about this in my book, Why White Kids Love Hip-Hop, both nationally and internationally. And so we see the impact of hip hop and basically people gravitating to it, absorbing it, putting their own stamp on it and articulating a vision of their own reality. And I think we see that in Palestine. We see it in France, throughout Europe. We see it in throughout Africa. We see it throughout South America, et cetera, in the Asian world as well.
Mm-hmm. You see it on the res in America as well.
Absolutely.
So when you first saw New Muslim Cool, and yeah, I saw the piece you wrote in Huffington Post about that.
Right.
Last year. Talk about that and what you think that Hamza Perez and this kind of cross-cultural, multicultural world he represents means for hip-hop, Islam, and the rest.
Yes, there's another big one.
It is, man.
I saw a trailer of the film. That probably was, I wrote the piece in the Huffington Post in June.
Right.
I must have saw that trailer in early on, maybe March or April. And I just remember being really struck by it. You know, part of it is we're in this, post 9/11 environment, where people who are Middle Eastern or who ignorant law enforcement think are Middle Eastern are under attack, you know, by the way they look. And so when I saw the trailer, I was like, man, this is something that's really powerful. But I hadn't heard anything else about the film. And then the film came out on PBS, and I wanted to write something about it before it came out. At this point, I had never met Hamza. I didn't know who he was. I had never met the filmmaker. Didn't know who she was. I had no connection to either one of them or anyone involved. But I just thought it was a powerful thing, and it reminded me of the 60s movement in this country. In the sense that you had young people, you know, cross-racially organizing around, you know, politics and religion. And but in that movement, because America was so racially polarized in black and white, we really didn't see much more of an expansion. I think the country was just different demographically then. So the first thing that struck me about it was just kind of like thinking back, you know, to the 60s where you had, you know, young people living together, doing their thing politically and religiously and culturally across race, like the Black Panthers and the Young Lords. And that's what it made me think of. Like, this is a moment that we're seeing again in the country, but at a different time when the country is much more diverse demographically and in this post 9/11 moment. And so then I saw the film and I was really moved by it and made me want to write something about it. So at first I was trying to write before the PBS thing, but then I wrote it after, and the piece had a huge response on Huffington Post. And later on after that, I met the filmmaker and we started talking about, you know, what more could be done so that people could see this film. And so that's kind of how it evolved.
Well, when I talked to Hamza a little bit ago, Hamza Perez said similar, what you said similarly, when he harkened back to the Panthers, the Young Lords, and, you know, there were groups like the Brown Berets, and on the white Appalachian side, there were the Young Patriots in Chicago, and all that stuff was going on back then.
Right.
But it was a different world. Clearly, what happened in the 60s is not what's happening in the late 20th and early 21st century. We're in a different place. So I wonder if you could talk about what you see as the difference culturally and politically with this cross-racial movement that's taking place. Because when I was – one little piece of diversion again. When I was watching what was going on in Copenhagen, at the environmental conference.
Right.
One of the things that hit me pretty deeply is that here was this 100,000 people from every continent on the globe, poor people, working people, students of every racial and ethnic culture on the globe, almost together in the streets of Copenhagen, demanding a different world. And now I'm looking at what you're saying and what Hamza was saying, and I'd like you to talk from your perspective what all that means and how it's different from what went down in the 60s.
Yeah, I think during the 60s, one of the things that we saw pretty early on was the emergence of national organizations, and I think the presence of national organizations, I think the emergence of global media as it was, you know, kind of emerging almost in an infantile stage at that point compared to what we have now. I think that things just evolved differently. I think in terms of the hip hop movement nationally, you have a great deal of young people creating activists and political organizations as well as cultural arts organizations, hundreds around the country, in cities like San Francisco and Oakland and Cleveland and Chicago, and smaller cities like Portland and cities like Boston. I mean, all over the country, smaller regions, regional organizations, places like Seattle. And but not until 2003 and 2004 do we see the emergence of national organizations. But you have these local organizations emerging, where young people are gravitating to hip hop, and hip hop is the impetus for them organizing and helping them to be organized. And so we see this emerging early, even in the 80s and in the 90s, but not until we get into 2003 and 2004 do we see the emergence of national organizations. So we have a whole cultural and political movement emerging and existing amongst young people around the country. that's pretty much off the national radar until we see the Hip Hop Summit Action Network in 2003, until we see the National Hip Hop Political Convention in 2004, and organizations like the League of Young Voters. And then later on in 07, 08, we got organizations like the Hip Hop Caucus. So, I mean, I think it's this long history, but also so much of it happening off the radar.
So when you come to Baltimore on Tuesday night and are part of this panel, that will include, obviously, Hamza Perez and Noura Masnavi, who is with the Muslim Advocates, and the woman who made the film, Jennifer Taylor. And the question I'm going to talk about is, America really post-racial? And they're going to screen New Muslim Cool. I'd like to hear what your thoughts are, given anything you said, what that really means. What does post-racial really mean? I mean, what the hell does that mean?
I mean, you know? I think that the way that it's pretty much been framed by people on the left and the right. I mean, the right has framed it as racial transcendence, as though race no longer matters. I think the left argues race does matter, and we have to hold on to, you know, our culture and who we are, because it's important. It defines who we are and it defines our place, not only in this country, but in the world. And so, you know, the argument is that America is not post-racial. My argument is that something has changed in the country. And with the election of Barack Obama, I think we've seen a tendency for people to try to de-emphasize race. I don't think that we can afford to do that. I think that race matters as an institutional construct. I think that race matters on an interpersonal level as well. What I'm going to push for people to think about in this conversation is that America is bigger than black and white. That when we talk about race in America going forward, we need to be talking about all of the various racial and cultural groups that are here in the country, because they are all helping to change the ways in which we define what it means to be American. I think that one of the problems that we've seen with the emergence of things like the Tea Party movement and other efforts post-Obama election is this tendency for people to say, well, we need things to be like they used to be. We need things to be like they were in the 50s. We're losing our country, quote unquote. And I think that this is fantasy. America has been very effective at promoting itself to the world as a white country. This is just no longer the case. And so I think that these are some of the issues that we want to address in this conversation. What does it mean to be racially profiled? What does it mean to be profiled religiously? What are the ways in which young people are living and thinking about race that never makes it on the national radar? So when we had the election of Barack Obama, my company Rap Sessions did a survey leading up to the election. We surveyed young people in what I call the hip hop and post hip hop generations about one of the questions we asked was, does race matter in your choice for president? This was around the same time that people were saying there was going to be a Bradley effect. And over 90% of young people in our survey said that race didn't matter in their choice for president. They said that gender didn't matter in their choice for president. Race, I think, matters a little bit more than gender, but they said that neither of these things were important. I think it's interesting that we're not tuning in to the ways that young people who've lived their entire lives in a post-segregation era are thinking about and thinking through race. And we still have this, what I call old racial politics, setting the national tone for dialogue on race around the country.
So I think one of the key things you also said is that when people want to go back to the 50s, I mean, I think there is a for want of a better term, a war in America. That's not with guns, but a war in America over who we are, that we were torn asunder as a nation from the 50s and 60s with the battle to end segregation and all the things that happened around that, that gave birth to a lot of new things. And there's a battle for the soul of who we really are. Are we the myth that lived until 1960, or are we something new that's being created? And that something new is deeply multiracial, given what all the demographers are going to tell us. So I wonder, you know, when you look at that and the intersection of that with class, because we're also talking about you know, the huge amounts of people in America who are living at the very bottom here, a multiracial mass at the bottom.
Right.
Where that takes us in this conversation about race.
Yeah, it's a heavy thing. I mean, I think that one of the powerful things about the film that we see in Hamza and the way in which Jennifer portrays him is that he's very American.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
He's very American, and he's living in this post-industrial city, Pittsburgh, in the throes of this post-industrial era, and he's very American. And what does that mean for him? I mean, we see this relative to the Indian community. We see it relative to the Native American community, relative to the Cuban community. I mean, so there are various ways in which people are identifying themselves and accepting themselves as a part of this American mix. But at the national level, when we talk about race and we talk about culture, pretty much the conversation is still reduced to the black-white paradigm. So that's one of the things that I want to really try to focus on in terms of this film. In terms of what you're saying about the way the economy is increasingly becoming a nation of haves and have-nots, I think one of the latest reports on income from the IRS was something like 300,000 Americans, the top 300,000 Americans with a greater net worth than the bottom 150 million Americans. That's half the country. So we're seeing a huge economic divide, and I think a lot of times race is being used by people who are able to set the terms of the national discussion as a divide and conquer tool. So we see people gravitating to things like the man who clearly had some issues, who flew a plane into an IRS building in Austin, Texas, a few days ago.
Right.
People somehow trying to make that. Make some political sense, where if that was something that happened out of a different group of a different racial or ethnic background that we wanted to racially profile, we would call it something else.
I mean, yeah, imagine if the person who flew that plane's name was Hamza.
Right. we'd have a national uproar and an upgrading of colors and national alerts going on.
There'd be we'd have a national emergency going on.
Right.
So, in kind of conclusion, all this, I think this conversation is going to be different than the other ones they've had, just because it's, I think, a lot in many ways because of the intersection here of Hamza Perez's being Puerto Rican, Muslim, and a hip hop artist, and a community activist, and your being here, kind of bringing this whole hip hop generation piece to it. I mean, it's taking this thing in a direction that it's not happened before in some ways. It's kind of almost leading up to where the next world is.
I think that we really need in this country people to have the political and the cultural sophistication to understand that they can be who they are culturally and even politically. And that doesn't and they don't need to be threatened by that in terms of their ability to work across those divides to make the country a better place. And I think that the film highlights a young man who doesn't fit any stereotypical idea that we have about the Midwest. but he is American, and he's in the Midwest. And interestingly enough, he has as much right to the country as anyone else who calls themselves an American citizen. I think that, you know, I've been on programs like the O'Reilly Factor and other so-called right-wing radio programs. And I think that there is this idea that somehow certain people have the right to call themselves American and other people don't. And I think we want to kind of fly in the face of that.
Well, America, Baltimore, I can say get ready for Bakari Keitwana and Hamza Perez. They're coming to Baltimore. So it'll be great to have you here.
Okay, I'm looking forward to meeting you all.
Same here. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union. Offering a full range of financial services, MeQ was formed in 1936 to help people during the Great Depression. And over 70 years later, they're still here to help people during difficult times. More information is available at mecu.com. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Justin Levy and Christina Arison. We're engineered by Brian Boone. Our interns are Judith Lloyd, Brian Boone, Richard Good, Gay Pinder, and Marianne Amos. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. Thanks to Democracy Now! For the clips from the most dangerous man in America, Daniel Ellsberg, and the Pentagon Papers. To hear this show again and podcast any of our past shows, hear new additional interviews, please visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.